Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today I'm very pleased to have as my guest the Speaker of the Iowa House, Pat Grassley. I'm going to start looking at what happened in legislative sessions, both in Iowa and across the river in Illinois in the next couple weeks. And I'm really honored to have the Speaker of the Iowa House here with me today to discuss what happened in Des Moines. Speaker, thank you so much for taking the time.
Yep, glad to be with you. It's good to be. I think we've even spoken before, so it's glad to be with you.
Yeah. It's been a couple of years, so we're going to have to do this more often. I always enjoy talking with you. Let's just start out with just your overview of how the session went. It seemed to be pretty calm for the most part. And I think as somebody who used to work in the Illinois legislature, that's usually a sign that the leaders have things under control pretty well.
Well, I always tell everybody, as long as everyone thinks it's under control from the outside, that's all we care about. Some days it doesn't feel that way. We've now had we came into this session with our largest majority with 67 seats that in the modern times that any party's had. So it had its own unique set of challenges when you're trying to, figure out how to manage all the personalities and stuff. So from my perspective, that was one of the things that we were learning on the fly with, but our caucus really came together and was able to do some big things. And we've been doing a lot of big things, and that's what I've been, no one wants to hear just about what you have done, but a lot of what we have done has also kind of tied into the things as we continue to move forward. You look at us continuing to lower taxes here in the state of Iowa, taking us to a 3.8% income tax cut. I think everyone expects every single year you continue to do that, but we've put those in place to make sure that they're going to be sustainable. We feel that they are. So that's a perfect example of something that while we didn't do anything this year, you still have to make sure you're fiscally responsible at the same time, making sure those things continue to move forward. We passed some bills, and one of the big topics that's really been out there that we were able to get through our caucus and we've passed several times is looking at property rights. That's something that maybe is a little bit more unique to this side of the river when it comes to some of your viewers and listeners. But obviously that's been a big thing when it comes to the use of eminent domain, when it comes to carbon capture pipelines. We've passed bills in the legislature the last 3 years out of the House, and we've finally got one that was able to make it through the Senate. And one thing that I always like to talk about when we're talking about that is this isn't about trying to stop any sort of development. I think we can all recognize that there is even some benefits from being able to have lower carbon scores in some of the fuels that we make here in Iowa. But at the same time, we heard from Iowans that making sure that protecting private property was the driving force behind that conversation. So there's been a lot of big things going on with the legislature, and I'm sure you'll have plenty to ask about, but from the standpoint of what we've been able to accomplish as a caucus and not only in the past, but what we continue to look at moving forward, I think our track record has been pretty proven.
Yeah, that's that eminent domain issue is interesting because it really pits, some competing interests, which, as Speaker, you like both sides of it, and you've just got to try to balance that. And as far as individual property rights, but also, carbon capture, which is important perhaps for economically for the state. So it requires, I'm sure, a lot of negotiating skills on your part to get the people in the room to kind of come to some agreement.
Yeah. And typically issues of that magnitude are more partisan. And that's been the interesting part as to what you said is this observation that this is not a partisan issue. We've had Republicans and Democrats on both sides of the issue. I've always taken the position and tried to lead the caucus in a way, and maybe not just on this issue, but where the majority of our caucus is at. And when I say a majority, I mean, nearly on this issue, nearly everyone is in the same position, but we try to really function as a body. When you have this many members, you have to take input from the caucus. That's how I've tried to lead. That's how I was, you know, influenced and learned how to be a leader in the caucus, is take that feedback from the members. And now the fact that there's 67 of us, there's even more voices to try to make sure that we're representing within the caucus. And that's, like I said, that wasn't a partisan issue, but it was one that there is, you know, there's a lot of difficult questions to answer within that. And you touched on a couple of those things. But at the end of the day, we felt like if we're going to come down on one side of it, you know, that fundamental right of private property has to be what trumps any sort of any other type of discussion, or maybe even things that we consider having those. So that was a perfect example of one that we worked through and had to weigh some really difficult interests when it came to reaching that conclusion.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned tax reform, Speaker Grassley. I know that's been one of the top two or three issues, maybe the top issues here over the last, well, 3 or 4 years. And as you mentioned, yeah, expectations grow every year. But can you kind of maybe take a minute for our listeners and put this in a bigger picture of what you've done over the years? And specifically, you did do more this year. An unemployment tax cut for businesses, but mm-hmm. also the constitutional change. So kind of put this in a big picture on where this is going for our listeners as well.
Yeah. And make sure I answer as many of those questions as you have within there. Sometimes I get going here and sharing too much, get too far into the weeds. So if I do, stop me. But
it's okay.
When it comes to the, and you're seeing this all across the country, and I think COVID really brought this to the forefront from the standpoint of states competing with one another to make sure that we can attract the best and the brightest, and also keep what we have here in the states. Because anymore, you know, we're competing with states like Florida, we're competing with states like Texas, Arkansas, and other those states that I would consider to be those, you know, they have good red conservative governors leading their states. And so we're all in a competitive market with one another. And we were in a position when we started down this path a few years ago on the tax piece, having one of the higher income tax rates for in the entire country. And when we look at that, we just know we don't have the beaches and some of those other things to offer. So if we can't even be competitive in the tax arena, we know that we're not going to be a winner long term. And so we've put ourselves in a position where we've worked down to a 3.8% flat tax. And a lot of what you hear as far as questions like, these are huge tax cuts for the rich, or these are unsustainable, and all those things, I always like to give the background on why we feel that we've been able to do this and why that it is sustainable. Because there have been other states that have taken big swings in income tax, but maybe didn't do it in the way that Iowa had. So I always want our picture to be clear on what that is. But we set up several years ago under split control of the legislature, when we couldn't find agreement with the Democrats to lower the income tax, we at least said any over collection that we take at the end of the year, that money needs to be set aside for future tax cuts. And now we finally got to the future to be able to utilize those. But we're sitting on right now as a state nearly $4 billion estimated in that taxpayer relief fund that I consider an over collection of Iowans' taxes. At the same time, we have roughly a $2 billion ending balance. Some want to call that a surplus. And on top of that, we're also sitting in a position where we have where we also have a rainy day fund and a cash reserve account that's required to be 10% of the overall state's budget. And so when you look at all of those things combined, we felt that we had an over collection of money from the state's taxpayers. If we can put ourselves in a position where we can lower that at the same time, utilizing some of those funds that we have to do it in a sustainable way, we have full confidence in being able to make this work. And we recognize in the short term that there will be a decline in revenue immediately. But if you look at the way most tax cuts have worked historically, not just in Iowa, but across the country, you've seen that the impacts that those have actually will have those long-term benefits to bring in more revenue. And what we're seeing right now with the maybe what I would call a little bit of uncertainty in the economy, I think we need to do everything we can as a state. But at the same time, we've done it very responsibly. So some have called for further tax cuts, go faster, go quicker, go further. And I'm of the mentality, whenever we have the opportunity to reduce the tax burden on Iowans, we need to do that. But we also have to do it to make sure we can still fund our priorities and make sure that it's going to be sustainable. I think we're in a good spot right now when it comes to that. And when you brought up the unemployment, you know, that isn't something that has been generally talked about when it comes to the personal income tax side. But when it gets back to what I said earlier, when it says making sure that Iowa it can attract business and keep business here in the state of Iowa, we are sitting at one of the largest trust fund balance. So the trust fund that is used to pay out unemployment that our businesses pay into was in the was, if I remember right, in the 30s when it comes to one of the highest as far as the $2 billion roughly in our trust fund. But at the same time, our population is one of the lower on the lower end of it. And you look at some of our competitors on our neighbors to the east and the north and Wisconsin, other states, we had a much more significant trust fund balance. And again, I kind of look at that with the same thing. If we are over collecting taxes on Iowans, whether it's on Iowa's businesses or Iowa's personal income taxpayers, we should try to find a way to reduce that. Now, the nice thing about the unemployment system that we have here in the state of Iowa is there are triggers in place. So if you hear about the conversation on the unemployment trust fund, we feel confident in making sure that that's going to be sustainable, because there are triggers in place where if we start chewing down into that balance that we have, those tax rates will be modified to make sure that we can keep a proper amount of money, so that way the benefits are sustainable. So again, you've probably heard me say that several times, the sustainability of these tax cuts that we've done, we feel that that also fell into that category of an overcollection, but at the same time, has the backstop in there that if we ever get in a position where we see some significant unemployment, that those triggers will then kick in to make sure that we can fulfill our obligation on the benefits. So I think from the tax side, Iowa, I would look at us as one of the leaders in the country of not only reducing the tax burden on Iowans, but making sure that it's being done sustainably. And we've put ourselves in that position over several years of preparing for this. It wasn't just like we woke up in 2023 and we're like, all right, we're going to start cutting taxes. We've worked our way towards this and we've done it responsibly.
You mentioned about getting in the weeds. By all means, do so. I mean, this format lends itself to that. And unlike when you get on TV and you got to do sound bites of 30 seconds, I think our listeners appreciate hearing more details. So by all means, get into the weeds all you want. I wanted to ask too, and I bring this up because I live in Illinois. I just got my property tax bill. And I know there's discussion over there led by you, but also Representative Kaufman from near here in the Quad Cities, looking at restructuring the property tax system totally, which I think is very, very interesting. And is somebody, again, and on the other side of the river, I'd be very interested in what your thoughts are. And again, as you just mentioned, this isn't being done just, you know, you wake up one day and Iowa, you guys have taken a measured approach to this over a number of years, and that's what's happening with the property tax system as well. Can you kind of update us on that a little bit, please?
Yeah, I would say if you were to ask me one of the things that I just finished my 19th session in the legislature, my 6th year as being speaker, or my 6th session, I should say, as being speaker. And this has been one of the more difficult things for us to try to figure a solution to. And this one, I will definitely probably get too far into the weeds, but this one, I think we have to more so than any other conversation that we have when it comes to taxes. But we have a system in it, and you know, every state's a little bit different, but we have a system in which our local taxing entities that we've given the authority to tax have pretty much drive the ship when it comes to this. I think Iowans and any of your listeners would be surprised at the at the amount of involvement that the state actually has when it comes to their local property taxes. I know that I did a survey earlier and there was a significant amount of people that responded, but there was also a significant amount of people that maybe lacked some clarity on where their tax dollars actually go. When it comes to those collections, whether it's your school, your county, your city, your township, whatever those would be, those money don't flow to the state. We don't collect those dollars, redistribute those dollars. Those are locally taxed and collected. And that's been one of the hardest parts of this conversations, and probably one of the things that I've been maybe the most frustrated about when it comes to property taxes is a lot of us being involved in this is a problem that I would say, and I'm not pointing the finger or passing the buck, has been a lot of decisions at the local levels in a lot of different jurisdictions. That being said, so I think the natural follow-up question is, well, then why is the state involved? I think it's reached a point, and it sounds like you've, you know, obviously if you've gotten your property tax bill, I'm assuming it's similar in a lot of other states. We have seen a system in which through inflation, we've seen these massive assessment increases, which while your local government may say, well, we haven't increased your taxes, I would say, well, then why am I paying more in taxes? Because we have a system right now that is predicated on how much the value of your home is worth. And that is just kind of a snapshot in time on whether it truly is that value or not. And that's been one of the things that we've been trying to juggle and balance is how much state involvement should really be in a local property tax system. At the same time, it's reached the point where, I mean, I've received emails, not form emails, but emails from all across the state of people that genuinely don't know how they can sustain living in the home that whether they've lived in for the last 30 years that's paid for, whether it's one that they've recently bought that's driven up the cost of their mortgage and their monthly payments. And so Iowans have to ask themselves this question. And I think anyone that's concerned about property tax, what level of service do we expect to have provided to us as a taxpayer versus what level of property tax are we willing to pay? And not a lot of folks in this conversation have brought up the services side of it because it's not a popular conversation to have. No, as an elected official, I'm probably stupid to sit here and say, we may have to have a willingness to have less services. But if we're going to look at this system holistically and take the right approach versus Band-Aid, because that's why part of why we're where we are right now is we've Band-Aid approached this thing for 20, 30 years, even before I was in the legislature. And now we sit here in a position where that's really the question for Iowans that we need to ask ourselves before the next legislative session. And we plan on doing some things at more of the local level to make sure our members are getting more feedback even so, and asking those types of tough questions. Because at the end of the day, I think we can modify a system, but immediately what you're going to hear from our local taxing entities is, well, I guess we'll have to eliminate fire. I guess we'll have to eliminate public safety. And I think there's more to the conversation than that, but that's always what we face as a legislature and why, quite frankly, the legislature has always kind of clammed up a little bit when it comes to taking the bold steps that are needed. Where I want us to try to get to and where I'm trying to lead as the leader of the House Republicans is we need to get to a point where I think that the property tax system for too long, the certainty has always lined with the taxing entity. They always had the ability to collect more revenue to meet their budget. Well, I want us to get in a position where Iowans know every year, and maybe there is a slight increase that you may see, but not these significant increases that Iowans are seeing, but have some certainty back in the hand of the taxpayer, because right now I think the system has gotten out of whack, that the certainty only exists for the taxing entities and not for the taxpayers of Iowa. That's how I'm trying to drive this conversation, recognizing that there's still a level of service that has to be provided, but we do have to ask questions and have very uncomfortable conversations about what do Iowans expect for services.
Listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR, I'm Robin Johnson, your host, and I'm very pleased and honored to have as my guest today the Speaker of the House of Representatives in Iowa, Pat Grassley. We've been talking about some of the accomplishments of this past legislative session, and we just got into property taxes, and I'm going to stay there for a minute because I think it's very interesting what you just said, and I've got to relate a personal example. When I served on a local city council, we tried hard to keep the city share of the property tax frozen, but when I went out to get groceries, people would still complain, my property tax rate went up, and that's because of all the other entities that are involved in it. And when you think about it, it's so subjective that our property tax system is based on placing a valuation on properties next to each other. And I think most people agree this system just doesn't work anymore. And so I salute you, and that's why I'm really curious to see what you come up there with, because I think it could be emulated across the country. Property taxes just isn't a very fair open system for funding mm-hmm. services, yeah. It seems like.
And you're exactly right. And like I said, in situations where individuals, you know, I think we look at people willing to upgrade and want to move to a different property. Right now, there's two things that I think that as I see just here kind of in my local area that I hear for feedback, two things that people are looking at when it comes to maybe wanting to buy a different house, maybe build a house, which then obviously frees up more housing stock in the market is, what's the property tax bill and what are interest rates? Well, interest rates is a little above our pay grade, but that property tax question that's being asked, and I think Iowans and anyone that's listening really take the time, and we've done some things with transparency so people can look at it. And I think there's some other models out there that we actually need to be better about and work towards that. And I think that's part of the solution. So people can actually see where that money is going. Because again, back to my original point that I made, is I think there's some misunderstanding of who even collects what taxes and where that money actually goes and how it's actually used. But I've been encouraging folks, and not to pass the buck from the legislature, because if Iowans expect us to deal with the problem, I think part of this is we've been able to accomplish things. So now there's more pressure on us to continue to make accomplishments. But you have to be involved at the local level. And I know as a former councilman, thank you for your service on that. But as a councilman, you know that some of those meetings are not overly attended, probably most of them, the same as school board meetings, supervisor meetings. And I've been telling Iowans, as a legislature, we understand that there's an expectation on us. But at the same time, there has to be that same expectation from their local taxing entities, because that is really where your differences are going to be made. Because again, back to what we said, is if you just collect more revenue based on assessments, and in Iowa we have unelected assessor positions, that's kind of an easy way out at the local level. And I'm not being critical of them. If I was a locally elected official, I would say the same thing. But you can collect more revenue without having to take a vote to increase a levy. The pressure needs to be put on, okay, why are we not reducing our levies? Because you're going to take in more through the assessments. And so some of those types of conversations, again, not to try to pass the buck away from me or the legislature, but have to be happening at the local level. There is only so many mechanisms in place that we can put without fully taking control, which I don't even want to entertain that conversation, because there's so many entities. But a lot of that is going to be locally led and locally driven. And so being involved in those meetings that probably are just boring as heck, and learning about whose sidewalks getting replaced and those things. But it's part of this overall conversation we're having right now.
Yeah, it's... Over here, there isn't much transparency anymore, and with the decline of local media, there just isn't the accountability that there used to be. We could talk. Maybe I'll have you back, Speaker, and we'll talk just about property taxes, because I think we could talk about that for the entire show. But I did want to get to another couple of issues here, and one's related to this. And at the federal level, of course, President Trump named Elon Musk the DOGE initiative to find waste in government, and we all know there's waste there. And I saw at the state level that's been emulated as well. And that kind of plays into what you just talked about, kind of looking at service levels. What do we want to provide at all levels, and what how do we provide just that those service levels without any waste? Do you look forward, I mean, to that at the state level, and maybe applying it to the local level as well?
Yeah. So I actually think we have an opportunity, and hopefully I'm answering your question by going on this path, because the first thing that popped in my head was this, which is this year for the first time. So I created a new committee this year. So as speaker, that's one of the roles that I have, is not only I can create committees, I appoint committee chairs, but with the opportunity that I feel we have with the federal government, where we have a willingness of a president who looks that they want to empower states to be able to have more control over local destiny, I think is really something that as a state, I think we want to be a leader saying, hey, federal government, we think we can do things quicker, more effectively, more efficiently. Because let's just be honest, this isn't even a partisan statement, but over the last 20, 30 years under Republicans and Democrats at the federal level, we have seen that the efficiency and the ability to get things done is not nearly as nimble as most state legislatures. And so this year I created a committee with the intent of looking at the federal funds that we receive. So it's the state, or it's the other offline funds that the state has, as well as federal funds, to look at ways in which we can go to the federal government. Now, a lot of these things we have to get a waiver for, and that takes time, and it's not as fast as I would like it. But ask the federal government, where can we have more flexibility as Iowa to control our own destiny? Because almost all of these federal programs treat Iowa the same as Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska, our surrounding states, and we all have different needs and demands. And honestly, we have different ways of being able to implement things. So we passed, and I'll use these as a couple of examples, and hopefully I'm answering your question. Ultimately, what I see with opportunities working with the federal government, we passed a couple bills looking at work requirements that would add 80 hours a month for our expanded Medicaid program that we did about 10 years ago. There's things in there that it doesn't apply to everyone on Medicaid, because we got pointed the finger of what if you're a caretaker, what if you're this, what if you're that. We did build those provisions into that, but at the same time, trying to ask the federal government for a waiver to say, hey, we want to be able to change the way our current Medicaid program works when it comes to our Medicaid expansion. We did the same thing with SNAP. We not only passed a bill in the legislature, but the governor also requested a waiver from SNAP to make sure that we were promoting healthier products with the use of our SNAP dollars. Those are the kind of efficiencies that I think states that want to be forward thinking. Whether you like Donald Trump or not, he does seem to have a willingness through a lot of people around him to want to get more power back to the states. And if we have that opportunity in president, which in my time in the legislature, regardless of party, I don't feel we've really had, we need to be taking advantage of it. Those are just two examples that we utilize, that I say that we looked at in the legislature this session. I would expect for us to continue to look at more of those kinds of things to say, hey, we can use these federal dollars much more efficiently, get more bang for our buck, which hopefully helps reflect from the federal government as well, that we're getting more efficiency out of our tax dollars. So I think Iowa has tried to be a leader on those. And those two that I gave you are pretty high profile issues, but I think there's other ones that we can be looking at moving in the future under this current administration.
I think too, I would add, this is another example of it's a bipartisan issue. President Reagan, I'm old enough to remember, Reagan had the Grace Commission, Clinton had the National Performance Review. Getting waste out of government it shouldn't be a partisan issue anyway. So
I agree with that.
Something we can all agree on. I've got time for just one more question. This flew right through and I didn't get to nearly all the topics I wanted, but that's okay, because I think that's
a kind way of saying that you got a long-winded politician.
Not at all. No, I was trying to work out a joke about Roundup in the weed conversation, but I couldn't think of it. But anyway, getting into the weeds. But I did want to end up on something that's important. I feel it's important. And that was the measures Iowa took to ban cell phones in schools. I teach part-time at the college level, and I prohibit them in my classes. And I even wish states, Illinois did this, they would do it at the college level too, because there's such a distraction. You also did it for driving. The question becomes one of enforcement partially, but what is it that led you to do that? What was there evidence on the bad effects of phones in schools, and how do you see that developing? I've got 1.5 minutes.
Okay, well, then I won't try to go too long. As somebody that has kids that are still in school, one just graduated and two others that are still in school, I recognize the challenges that we face when it comes to these technologies that we see and the impacts that they're having. And we could probably have another episode on this topic. But ultimately, at the end of the day, so what we did when it comes to school districts, and a lot of our schools already do this, but just say you have to have a minimum policy during instructional time. I think we can all agree, again, not as a partisan issue, but during instructional time, our students, we're putting a lot of money into their education. They need to be taking it very seriously, and it makes it harder for the teachers to educate when they have those distractions. When it comes to driving, I'll be honest with you, that's one that it's taken me time to get to the point where I could be supportive of it. I've always struggled with it, but I think we've seen statistically through law enforcement conversations that and we've all just seen it anecdotally driving down the road. But finally got to the point in which I felt that I could even support that, because it has gotten a growing problem. There's a lot of data that backs up that, not only in the roads, but in the schools. And so we were able to finally reach conclusion on those two issues that have kind of the cell phones while driving, the distracted driving has been out there a little longer. But both of those issues, I think it was time for us to make sure that at least our school districts were being proactive.
Well, Speaker Grassley, Pat Grassley has been my guest today on Heartland Politics, and really interesting discussion. Again, our format here on this show allows longer answers, and I welcome those because most times for our listeners out there, you're schooled to get on TV or radio and speak in sound bites of 30 seconds, and everybody hates that. So this show at least allows more in-depth discussion of policy. If you love policy, you would have loved this show.
Absolutely. I appreciate that.
My thanks to Speaker Grassley. Yeah, let's have you back and we'll talk more at length about some of these key issues. Thank you again.
Yeah, look forward to it. Thank you.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.